Emily works as a midwife at an urban hospital in Milwaukee. She traveled to Afghanistan in 2012 to research the impact of war on civilians, conducting interviews with Afghan civilians, civil society members, and health and government leaders. In the U.S., she's made public presentations and lobbied elected officials on the adverse health outcomes of war.
Thank you. As Bob said, my name is Emily Malloy, and I'm a certified nurse midwife in Milwaukee. This is Jerry Gorman, a professor at the University of Illinois Chicago and a hospice nurse, and Ellen Canelli, a family nurse practitioner in Chicago. We do not have any disclosures, and our abstract is available online. So briefly, we're going to talk about the APHA policy recommendation in 2009, the role of public health practitioners, academics, and advocates in relation to armed conflict and war, and how each of us has tried to apply this policy. Each of us has a background in nursing, midwifery, family practice, and hospice. We think that these very diverse backgrounds are all applicable. And in the past 2 years, each of us has traveled to Afghanistan. As you just learned in the previous presentation, Afghanistan has had a devastating history of conflict for the past 40 years. In fact, in the 2009 APHA policy statement, Afghanistan is actually used as an example, along with five other countries, as a country in which the infrastructure crucial to health and well-being has been destroyed. Briefly, some statistics on this slide and the next one. There are approximately 3.2 million stillborn babies annually. A 2011 survey ranked Afghanistan one of the top worst place in the world for women. I'll just draw your attention to a couple statistics on this slide. The total life expectancy for both men and women in Afghanistan is 60.5 years. As far as health care providers, there are very, very few. Per 1,000 members of the population, there are 3.6 midwives and nurses and 2.9 physicians, and only 34% of births are attended by a skilled healthcare worker. This is a picture from Emergency Hospital, an Italian NGO that treats anyone who presents at its doorstep. Jerry worked with Emergency Hospital, and these are her photos. Yesterday in the keynote address, we heard that we fall in love with people, not populations, so we wanted to include a picture of people we've worked with. So a couple highlights from the 2009 statement that we will specifically talk about in this presentation. Some recommendations are strengthening the infrastructure to promote peace, advocating for an expanded public health role in preventing war, and putting the prevention of war into the public health agenda, a place where most of us as public health providers don't stereotypically think of it. The APHA recommendations include fostering dialogue, improving the competency of public health workers, and working with schools of public health to develop curricula addressing peace. With that, I will turn it over to Ellen to talk about the structural, community, and personal level of the recommendation.
So on a structural level, I'm going to talk about health as a bridge to peace. Health as a Bridge to Peace is a World Health Organization multidimensional policy and planning framework. It supports healthcare workers who are delivering care and programs in conflict and post-conflict situations. As it states, the real goal of this framework is to use health as a bridge for peace building. While none of us are really experts on this policy, we thought it was pertinent to include it as it is an example of a system-wide public health response to war. These are some of the specific recommendations for this program. It includes a comprehensive perspective on public health, victims, public actors, and full consideration to human rights. It has a heavy emphasis on preventing dependency on external aid, involving local aid, and local civil society. It recommends the development of lead staff in war-prone regions as opposed to off-site locations, and most importantly, it has a bottom-up approach. On a personal level, we wanted to introduce you a little bit more thoroughly to Dr. Tekwi Young. As they did talk about in the keynote speech, we fall in love with people, not populations. So Dr. Tekwi Young is known in Afghanistan as Dr. Hakim, which is a Dari word for doctor. He's a medical doctor originally from Singapore. He had gone to Quetta, Pakistan to offer his services in an Afghan refugee camp. And as Patrick kind of described in the previous presentation, he came to the conclusion that, you know, working in a refugee camp was a Band-Aid. The real problem was to try and prevent the war. And so he found himself in Bamiyan working on a public health project. He then took a position at a local college, started teaching on nonviolence, Martin Luther King and Gandhi. This was initially very poorly received. The students thought it wasn't achievable. The course was shut down and death threats were made. Later on, a small group of students emerged and created this intentional community called the Afghan Peace Volunteers. This is Hakeem. We're going to get to this slide a little bit later. It's just out of place. From a community level, we want to talk about the Afghan Peace Volunteers a little bit more. Out of Hakeem's course on nonviolence, this small group emerged of multi-ethnic Afghans. They concluded that nonviolence is not merely effective, it's essential to the long-term stability of their nation. Since 2008, they have been living out this sustainable community, trying to organize and promote peace in Afghanistan. They originally called Our Journey to Smile. They went to register themselves as a civil society organization. They said, Our Journey to Smile is not an appropriate name. And then the peace volunteer said, well, what if we call it Why Not Love? And they said, also, not an appropriate name. And then they became the Afghan Peace Volunteers. So they took a little bit more of a non-disruptive approach. And so for the last 5 years, its members have now started living out an experiment in peacemaking. In addition to studying nonviolence among themselves, they promote peace in ways that we think of as public health. Their mantra is attack problems, not people. They've created a program called the Duvet Project, in which the peace volunteers pay women to sew heavy blankets for families in refugee camps that would otherwise go cold. This is a direct response to the severe winter in 2011, in which over 1,000 children died in refugee camps. They've created peace parks, which they promote as safe places for people to process trauma amid conflict. And they've started informal schools for street children, both boys and girls, who are forced to work during the day and can't attend school. They're a small but shining group, you know, living out the recommendation of the 2009 policy statement that we're talking about today. I'll now turn it over to Jerry Gorman, who discussed the role of nursing in light of the APHA recommendations and reflect on her experience with emergency. Oh, yeah. So I think we just go.
Okay. So as the largest segment of public health, or of, healthcare professionals, nurses are often well positioned to serve in all three of the roles delineated in the APA position paper, that of educator, practitioner, and advocate. Just to use my own experience as example, as an educator in the College of Nursing at UIC for the last 12 or 13 years, I've had the opportunity to try and inject not only secondary and tertiary preventive measures into my class, but increasingly over the last few years to challenge my students to think also about primary prevention. And along those lines, just a plug for the session tomorrow on teaching war prevention and advocating peace promotion. There's flyers in the back there, one of the roundtables sponsored by the Peace Caucus. As a practitioner, as mentioned, I had the opportunity as a hospice nurse to go and work in the hospital in Kabul in the summer of 2013. I was there over Ramadan, which happened to be the most violent period of the year for them. And as advocate, I've really taken my cue from emergency, which takes APH's policy statement one step further, and instead of viewing war as one of the most significant threats to public health, its founder, Gino Strada, always states that war is the greatest threat to public health. When I heard him say that when he made one of his first American tours in 2006, I was really sold and signed on. So from the perspective of all three of these roles, as educator, as advocate, and as practitioner, the contribution I'd like to make this afternoon is this, that while we recognize, as the position statement observes, that in times of war the number of injuries dwarfs the number of deaths, still in our evolution as a civilized and more compassionate global community, we must recognize that the manner of death matters. The right to a dignified death in as much peace and comfort as possible should not be the sole province of wealthy and developed countries like the U.S. and the United Kingdom, where we make available alternative therapies, harp music, and generous analgesics to the dying and their loved ones. It should also be a right recognized for all, and in conditions of triage, access to a peaceful death becomes another right stripped by brutal conditions of war. Under the provisions of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, dying alone and in pain can and should be regarded as another variation on torture. Thank you.
If you're interested, at the end of this presentation, we do have some websites that you can look at and a reading list if you would like to read more about the conflict in Afghanistan. Thank you.
Thank you.